You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
We're recording somewhere else today.
We are.
So welcome to our new space. This is a new space for all the Desperate Housewives fans. Welcome to Desperate. That's where you are, is what you're listening to. This is a podcast where two unwed women, no longer super single. One of us isn't single.
No.
We used to be single when this started.
Yes, we were, but no longer.
Either way, we're not married.
I'm not married. I got that.
We don't have rings on it. We don't cook. We're not domestic.
If I was married, I'm not cooking.
You do care for animals, though.
I do.
I'm not an animal owner, but you have, like, I don't know.
I'm an animal step-parent.
Yeah, it's kind of domestic. I don't know. But two unwed women here. We are recapping. We're watching and recapping all of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. It left a mark on a generation. And we wanted to bring it back, talk about it with you guys, and find other fans, which we've done successfully.
We're going to bring the cult following to the forefront.
We will.
No more secret Desperate Housewives fans. It's going to be cool again.
They always are secret, too.
Yeah, people are like, oh, I didn't know anybody watched it, or I didn't know this. I mean, like, multiple people have said that to us.
I know. I feel like, why be secret about that one, not, like, you should be secret. Okay, one thing, and I've watched it. I think you should be secretive if you, like, watch Riverdale as, like, a 28-year-old.
Yeah, that's something that you keep, like, if you're out of the age range that should be watching it, then definitely keep that to yourself.
Or I watched all of Pretty Little Liars. Now everybody knows, like, I watch every single season.
I watched the first, like, three seasons because they were on when I was, like,
freshman. When we were in high school. Yeah, it was happening.
But I fell off because it was, like, it was so twisty and convoluted that I just lost track of everything.
Yeah, everybody ended up being the killer and, like, all this shit. But either way, we're here to talk about Desperate Housewives today. I'm watching this series for the first time, and I'm having a blast so far.
And this is one of many times that I've seen the show, but it has been a hot minute, so there are details that I'm getting, you know, reminded of.
Yeah, so it can never be too, like, I mean, things just get foggy over time.
Yeah.
Either way, we're watching episode 17 today of season one. We're still at season one. I mean, there's only 23 episodes of the first season, so we're pretty far along.
I know, we've only got, like, six more after this.
Yeah, it's called There Won't Be Trumpets. Last time we watched episode 16, and what we're going to do today is take you through a little recap of what happened in that episode, so you're all caught up to speed.
Yeah.
Then we're going to do our own desperate deeds. And we have a fan desperate deed, which...
Yeah, we do have a fan desperate deed.
We can just do that one today. We'll take you to the fan desperate deed.
Yeah.
And then that'll get us warmed up for what the desperation we're going to see. And then we go into our full recap of the episode, which we're really excited about. Then we do Housewife of the Week. The person, which that's on my list of things to do to make the rubric of how we choose it.
It's pretty chaotic right now.
It's pretty chaotic. We just go based off a feeling. Yeah. We make a case.
We're like, oh shit, pick one now, quick.
But we should make a rubric. And so we do a Housewife of the Week, a Fuck, Marry, Kill, and then an apple rating on a scale of 1 to 5 apples.
Yeah.
So there's a lot in store today, per usual. Last time, a lot happened. It was all about Scandal, episode 16.
Yeah, it was. And all about Scandal.
Yeah. We both really enjoyed it for different reasons. I love a scandal and gossip. I think everybody does.
Who doesn't?
But we said, and this has stuck with me all week, where at the end of the episode, we were like, you know, I might not remember everything about this episode, but I will remember this, like, key friendship moment.
So, yeah, the friendship moment between Brie and Gabby that we got last episode, I think, was a real standout. And, you know, it's funny because the show, like, posits that they're all, like, really good friends, but we don't actually get a lot of those kinds of moments. Feels like every few episodes we get one, but not, like, we rarely even get them all hanging out. Ever.
No, we questioned, that was our part two of episode one, like, of our recap. Are these women even friends? They sat at that table so cold, so distant. And I'm like, I know it was a funeral, but they actually didn't look like they fucking liked each other. I don't think they knew a single thing about each other.
No. So, like, this was one of those times, I guess, that we got to see their friendship in action, which I really enjoyed. I know you really enjoyed. But those are the moments that, like, stick out. It's, like, these great actresses, like, getting to work off each other. Like,
I know.
I like when they have stories that kind of collide like that.
I do, too. But basically, Gabby was having trouble with her plumbing. She was taking a shower, and, like, Carlos noticed just, like, sewage.
It was literally shit.
It was brown water, is disgusting. So he notices brown water coming up through everywhere, like, overflowing. And Mike is in the front yard, like, in a hole. And they hired Mike the plumber to, like, look into it. And I'm like, Mike actually does have plumbing skills. It's not, like, a cover-up.
It's a complete fake. Yeah. Do you think that when he got hired for this job, they were like, okay, we got to put you through plumbing trade school?
I know. I'm like, is that something he did before?
To make sure that the cover was, like, real?
I think so. It doesn't take that long, I don't think. Maybe it should take longer, though. If somebody's working on my plumbing, I'm like, I want at least a year of...
I've heard that being a plumber, though, is, like, a really lucrative gig.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot. If I could find a plumber, I think I've said that a couple times. I'm not joking. If I could find a plumber.
It's job security, too. People will always need, like, pipes fixed. Yeah. Like, that'll never stop. We're actually short of, like, people that do trades like that now.
Yeah, they're about to start paying people to do that. I'm like, catch me being a plumber.
Yeah,
I'll
go be a sexy plumber.
You get to wear the, like, onesie. It's very in.
Yeah,
very,
those are in.
Very Silver Dickies. Lake. Yeah,
yeah. That's like, you could buy those, like, Urban Outfitters now.
Does she live in Echo Park or is she a plumber? Like, which one?
I want people to always be guessing.
Is she coming from Los Globos or
is that
job?
A prop wrench or a real wrench?
Yeah, I want them to know. So Mike fixes, he doesn't fix it. He says it's going to cost you about $6,000 or $7,000 to fix it. And, like, Gabby throws up, basically. She's like, ugh.
Yeah, she's like, ooh.
You can see her intestines, like, twisting. She's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, we have other things on our list that are more important. And Mike is, like, more important than, like, running water.
Yeah,
and
he's like,
you know. And Mike is also, like, tail between his legs because last episode he was arrested. And he's like, I'm surprised you guys even called me. Everybody's ignoring me.
He's like, arrested. Everyone hates me now. I'm like, yeah. Why? He wasn't convicted of anything.
I
guess, like, we forget that, like, there's a whole, like, part of the neighborhood that we don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, characters we don't know. And they all are like, we actually think that Mike might be the murderer because they don't have any other story or anything.
He's ostracized.
Yeah.
So they spend their whole episode, like, dodging this problem. Like, they go and use other people's bathrooms, and, like, Gabby ends up stealing a porta potty, and there's, like, a romantic moment over it, which is one of my least favorite things I've seen on television. Gabby and Carlos, like, bond over the porta potty, and
yeah.
It's
weird.
And then they get in a fight about it. Carlos is like, we're only this poor because you wanted so much stuff, and, like, you're so materialistic, and, like, they get in some fight about that, and
it's utter bullshit.
Yeah. And then one last time Gabby goes and uses the bathroom at Bree's house, and Bree had a showdown with Macy that made her think about her friendships. And Bree was like, you know, if you're struggling with money, you could tell me, Gabby. And Gabby's like, ew, I can't believe you even asked me about money. She's like, real friends wouldn't do that. And Bree is only working off of what Macy Gibbons said. Macy Gibbons was like, real friends ask each other how they're doing.
Yeah.
So Bree tries to ask Gabby how she's doing. And Gabby's like, real friends don't fucking discuss this problem. You would have acted like nothing was wrong because you know me.
Well, and then Bree is like, I just feel hurt that you wouldn't tell me. And then Gabby kind of throws in her face like, well, you didn't tell any of us about Rex, like, paying Maisie for sex. We all saw the black book.
Savage, savage.
Yeah.
But then it comes full circle when Bree just marches over one day and, like, gives Gabby a check for $14,000.
At least $14,000.
That she was going to pay Maisie Gibbons off with. Mm-hmm. So she's like, just take the money. Gabby's like, I can't. She's like, real friends won't let you say no. And it was, like, a really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
So that's what happened with Gabby. And then Bree, since she's tied in, and like we said with Macy got arrested top of episode, they find out that she has a little black book with all the names of her clients in it, and Rex's name is going to be in there.
Yeah, so everyone at the country club's going to know what's up.
Yeah, and everybody at the country club does find out, and they're fucking awkward to Rex and Bree over dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Bree loses it on Rex. Rex tries to leave because everybody at the country club while they're eating dinner is staring at them, and Rex says, let's just go. I don't even give a fuck. Like, it's our business, not theirs. And Bree straight up says, if you take a step out of here, I will scream about everything that you've ever done to me. And it was pretty scary.
I wasn't sure
how I felt. And before that, Bree tried to buy off Macy Givens with $14,000. She goes to the jail and is like, please don't release that. And Macy makes a point. She's like, if I do it for you, I have to do it for everybody, and remove their husband's names.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that's where Macy tries to front with Bree and says, if you were a real friend, you would have asked me how I was.
Yeah.
And Bree obviously hears that and tries to apply it unsuccessfully in her life. But at the end of the day, it brings us that friendship moment, and Bree and Rex seem to just chug along after this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really discuss the black book, but they stay together, so.
I know. I feel like they're kind of over it in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, Bree, I guess, is over it.
I guess if your husband just cheats on you with a chick you know, and you're, yeah, I don't know.
If there was a black book and it got released after all they've been through, I don't know if I could recover from that. Like,
all your friends know. If you were keeping it a secret, I guess.
It's one thing to have, like, betrayal and it be something between you and your husband, but then to have, like, literally every person in the city know that he not only cheated on you, but paid for it, which is, like, nothing wrong with sex work, but if you're, like, a person and your significant other cheats on you and pays for it, that's, like, salt in the wound.
I'm frowning.
Yes! Yeah. Like, that is brutal. Oh, yeah. Man.
Ooh. So, yeah. That's where we were with Gabby and Bree.
And then Susan ended up having, like, a very Edie-centric storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So Susan's really struggling with her breakup with Mike. And she ends up bonding with Edie, kind of, because Edie, they have poker night and Susan's not there, and Edie kind of pries into Lynette, like, why isn't she there? And Lynette tells her and basically says, like, if you want to be in this friend group, you need to be more supportive of Susan. So Edie, like, asks Susan if she wants to, like, basically forces her to go to a bar with her, and they drink and they talk about Mike, and then they discuss how they both think, like, Paul's kind of suspicious. So they end up, like, sneaking into his house and finding a tape that's marked, like, Angela's party or some
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I mean,
they don't end up getting to watch it because he gets home. Edie and Paul end up having sex, we think.
Our favorite thing ever. Yeah, my gosh.
Because so Susan could get out, and then that's basically her storyline. Just so everyone knows, the Paul part of the storyline, we know that Felicia mentions that she knew Angela. And Paul's like, what? And then he watches that tape. So we actually get to see what's on the tape, and you see Felicia in the background. So if Susan had watched it, maybe she would have gotten some more information there. I don't know.
You were going to say, just so everybody knows, Paul has a huge dick, we think.
Also, yes, we do think Paul has a huge dick.
That was literally what you were going to say.
I believe it.
We surmise.
And then last, but yeah, kind of least, Lynette had another kind of, like, side quest storyline that didn't really connect to anybody. It fell on theme, like, it was on theme, but it was also, like, it was weird to me that, like, Lynette was so detached when all the other storylines were kind of intertwined. But anyway, there's a lice outbreak at her school, and everyone suspects that her sons are the perpetrators. They get uninvited from a birthday party. Lynette ends up finding out that the woman whose son's birthday party it is, like, her son's the one that's been causing problems, and she, like, egged on the rumors. So Lynette basically forces this lady to, like, say that her sons aren't the lice out. That's the whole story. That's it.
It's really boring.
It's pretty lame.
It's the throwaway.
Throwaway.
She shows down with a mom in, like, a bounce house and says that she's going to tell everybody this and that. Like, it's all about, it is about scandal in a different way. She's like, I'm going to tell the moms that your kid is patient zero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess I can't, I mean, we don't have children. I don't know what it's like to have these, like, little itty, it feels like so unproblematic to me, like, itty bitty problem. These are, like, not big problems to me.
I don't think they're big problems, but I guess if your whole world is your children, then maybe they are.
Yeah.
I don't, even Tom's kind of like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, Tom was like, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was not on board,
but super scared of lice. personally. So
I'm terrified of it. I'm traumatized.
Yeah, your friend had it a bunch of times.
Yeah,
right?
My hair, I have thick ass hair. You have thick ass hair. Like it is, and our hair is like the color of lice. So it's really hard to
I would like shave my head.
I
that doesn't
about
even
it.
Get rid of them, right? If you shave it, you it have does, to like.
Like, it's easy to get rid of them. Ugh. You still have to probably do, like.
Disgusting.
You have to, like, do the chemicals.
Yeah. Well, this week, if we want to roll into our desperate deed, we have a fan desperate deed.
We do.
Which we're in love with. We love that you guys have reached out in different ways. And someone reached out and we made it sure it was okay to share it, but I personally like this because I've had something similar. It has to do with having your period. Mm-hmm. Our fan, our number one fan, said about when I was 22, my best friend and I, best friend forever, sounds like, since kindergarten, we went to see this guy I was crushing on. I didn't know it, but I'd started my period and didn't realize it. We sat on the couch with a bunch of the dude friends and just like hanging out for a bit, smoking, drinking, whatever. Sounds like a really chill party.
Mm-hmm.
Like
sounds awesome.
Yeah. Like, when we like went up to leave, I got around turned around to make sure I had everything and saw that I bled through my entire pants and left a huge spot on this dude's couch.
Oof, I feel her
and
pain.
I am like, oh. Oh, God. My friend, okay, true friend moment, though. I'm like, this would have been our move. My friend gave me her hoodie so I could tie it around my waist, though. And I'm like, that's a true friend.
Coming in hot, coming in clutch.
And she walked behind me to the door. I'm like, friendship goals. And we laugh so hard to this day. Just like think how funny it is because she's like the guy had to see it and she says the guy hit her up afterwards.
Well, I guess it worked out kind of.
I think it worked out and she says I even brought it up to him and he pretended he didn't know anything. So I'd say good on that guy as well. She says, I think he was lying to me to be nice, but like we don't talk anymore anyway. And I'm like, yes, I would say, I mean, good on your friend. I don't think it's, I mean, the cover up of that is desperate. You feel desperation in your soul when you've bled on something.
Oh, I would have just ran it away. I think I made it 1,000 times worse. I don't know if I could have played it off that cool.
I would have never spoken to that man again.
Me either.
I would have never even pretended.
I wouldn't have had the guts. She got some guts.
She had guts to bring it up again.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. This would haunt me for the rest of my life. I would never tell anybody. But you know what? We're going to normalize it. Because you know what? Girls bleed sometimes. Yeah, and it happens.
Yeah. We should normalize it. But, oh, my God. I don't have, like, get periods anymore. But I would feel traumatized if that did happen. Any time in my life. It happened to me in the sixth grade at school. I, like, bled on a chair.
Okay, so I, like, never had regular periods the entire time I had periods.
Yeah.
So they would just happen, like, every few months. Like, not even, like, monthly. It was, like, sometimes I'd go 6 months, sometimes I'd go 2. So, obviously, like, I was never just
wearing.
You're never
prepared, yeah.
So one day in gym class, I, like, bled through, and there was, like, a little puddle of blood on the gym floor. It was the most embarrassing moment of my life.
A puddle of
not, like,
blood?
A puddle, but, like, a few drops. Like, enough that it was, like,
oh, my God, all the way to the floor.
Because you're just in, like, think about what you wear in gym class. Like, it was, like, super thin, like, little running shorts. And
some Sophie shorts or whatever, Sophie.
Yeah, it was so, like, I don't know. And I remember another girl, like, she, like, noticed right away, and she, like, sat me back down. And she, like, got, like, she helped me take care of it. We weren't even friends.
Yeah, girls have girls' backs. Yeah. Like, because we all know the desperate feeling where you're, like, I don't want a single person, man or woman, to just see. It's vulnerable. Like,
it was awful.
Bleeding everywhere.
It was awful. So I felt her pain. Luckily, the girl helped me. And, like, I was in my gym clothes, so I had other clothes.
Yeah.
So I was, like, oh, thank God.
That's what's up.
And I told my, basically, I just, like, told my teacher what happened. And he was so flustered by it, he excused me from class for the day. Because he was like, you could tell he just didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
he's like, oh my God, mortified teenage girl. What do let her go. So, like, it was fine. But I just, like, hearing that, though, to have that happen in front of, like, a crush.
In front of your crush. Oh my God.
No.
But your best friend from kindergarten was there to save you.
Yeah.
Imagine if she was alone.
See, this is why you always gotta have your girlfriends around, because you never know.
You never do.
You never know
what's gonna happen. So that's our desperate deed for this week. Collectively, you got to hear.
Shout out to our fans.
Yeah, shout out. We love you. Other than that, we can just get started. I think we're gonna go watch the episode, see what shenanigans everybody gets up to, and then we'll be right back. But you know what we say? Buckle up.
Buckle up.
Season 1, Episode 17, There Won't Be Trumpets. Lynette befriends a deaf woman and causes a miscommunication that she can't fix. Susan finds herself attracted to Edie's hunky new contractor. Bree tries to discipline Andrew, but he is too far out of control. Mama Celeste snaps out of her coma, but doesn't survive long after. The funeral Carlos arranges costs him more than he knows.
I've stopped waiting for heroes.
You gotta save yourself these days.
You gotta just, yeah. You gotta take care of yourself.
You can't expect people to be heroes. And I think, it's nice when someone does show up, but... can't depend on that shit. Can't just wait around for your night to roll up.
Some of these were terrifying. Lynette's storyline, personally, is terrifying to me this episode.
Yeah, everybody. This episode was... there's a lot going on, I feel like. I feel like a lot.
It was up. I mean, we'll get there, and the Apple rating is up there for me. But also, I'm just like, damn. This is fucked up. There's a lot of fucked up shit. The audacity of a young man to spit on his mother as well.
We talked about this before we started recording, but spitting on somebody, I think, it's weirdly the most disrespectful thing you can do.
Never not shocking.
It's never not shocking. Because it's such a sick, like, it's gross. It's disgusting. Not just, like, disrespectful. It's gross. Like, especially, like, look at COVID. We can't be spitting on people.
We can't be spitting on anyone.
I feel like spitting on someone falls in the realm of like throwing a drink on someone, because it's just like a little extra gross. Now they have like they're wet, and now like you've done this thing that's like very publicly like
shaming. Nasty. I'm trying to think if I feel they are in the same realm for me. Like I would never think about spitting on somebody.
I think spitting's worse, but I think that's like a similar.
I could think of throwing a drink on somebody.
I would never think to spit on
someone. I could be, like, drawn to the point where I'm like, I want to throw a drink on that person. But I don't know that I would ever be like, I would spit on them. So much disdain.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm like, someone's coming to my mind right now.
I'm like, who? Yeah, there are a couple people I think I'd spit on. But once you spit on someone, now you just automatically lose the upper hand, because now you're the asshole that spit on someone.
And everybody's like,
yeah, it'll never be okay.
They're recoiling. Yes. Well, yeah, we have some heroes. We have some disgusting acts in this episode. And first thing we see, though, and I mentioned this a while back, I said, what happened to fucking Juanita, you guys? What happened to her?
They really let us hang on this for a while.
Juanita never made another appearance. So Mary Alice Young is welcoming Juanita to afterlife.
She is. You could tell she kind of builds it up. She gives this whole monologue about dreams.
Yeah.
She discusses all the different people that work at the hospital at night and how, like, they all dream of basically getting out of there in some way. But then she, you know, the camera zooms in on Mama Celeste. And
we're like, what? Who is she? Who is this woman?
Who is this Hispanic lady? Yeah. I'm confused. Yeah. And it basically, Mary Alice, like, says, like, Mama Celeste has had a lot of dreams over the past few months.
Five months, specifically.
Which means she came around, like, what, a month after Mary Alice died?
Yeah, not that long.
So she has dreamed about a lot of things. She's dreamed about when she caught Gabby. She's dreamed about getting hit. But the dream that she has the most is imagining telling Carlos what she saw. And then she woke up. She wakes up, and something that I have to note that made me laugh was, like, okay, she's been in a coma for, what, 5 months now?
Yeah.
And when she wakes up, she stands up and is like running around just fine. But her voice doesn't work. I'm like, I've seen Kill Bill. I know how it works. You have to, her muscles would be atrophied. But they like make that like, oh no, her voice is because she hasn't talked in 5 months, but her body's fine.
Okay, yeah, I wrote she walks her tiny butt around the hospital with her little like IV bag and shit, and then I was like, I also noted, I'm like, do you think going into a coma is a good way to lose weight?
Yeah, but you get a flat ass. Yeah. Fucking laying there all day. Andrew and I were talking about that because like people that have jobs where they sit all day, they get like a shelf butt. You know what we're talking about. Yeah, and like that's what I picture, but like a coma butt, like you're sitting up, laying down all day.
The flattest ass. I can't wait for that to be in a rap song. like it's in a coma.
If someone uses that line, please pay us for it, because this is genius.
Yeah, coma ass. But she also pulls out her IV like it's nothing. Like she fucking rips that IV out. She's like, I need to call my son right now. She tries to get somebody's help, and then she slips on some water and falls down the stairs
and dies
there. And I said, yeah, dies, lots of question marks. I was like, what? And this chick Ruth Ann is there on her smoke break, and she's like, she runs over to Mama Celeste. She sees that she's dying, and like Mama Celeste tries to tell her, she's like, you have to tell my son that my like his wife is cheating on him. And Mary Alice Young is like, that dream never comes true. And I'm like, oh, Gabby gets away with it.
Gabby like gets away with this in the most diabolical, like, oh man. The poor nurse, she had headphones in, so she like didn't hear a word that Juanita said. And like, it's just brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's a crazy way to open the episode. They made us wait how many episodes
a
for
lot.
Her?
And like 5 to 10. It was like episode 7 when she got hit. Yeah. It was crazy. So 5 months have passed. She's now dead. Death count 2 total officially. Mm-hmm. 3 with Mary Alice. Mary Alice, Martha Huber, Gabby's stepmom.
Yeah.
Juanita.
Or so, mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law. Whatever she is. Evil stepmom. They're related now. So we go to our intro, and then Mary Alice comes back to like welcome us into the rest of the storyline. She says, we honor heroes for different reasons, for their bravery, their daring, their goodness, but mostly because we at one point or another dream of being rescued. And then we roll into Susan's story with Mike coming over to her house. Susan is like dreaming about all these different ways that Mike could come and greet her, and they all just end with him making out with her,
which to me spells, okay, you want to be with him, just be with him. Like,
yeah,
if she's daydreaming about like him telling her, oh, I killed for you, and she kisses him, or I'm gonna kill you, and she kisses him. Yeah. So I'm like, wait.
The murder suicide one was shocking.
So I'm like, why don't you just get with him then if you're like daydreaming about? I'm so confused.
And he doesn't exhibit toxic man behavior currently. Like,
he's
maybe
like desperately trying to tell her the truth.
Yeah,
I don't think he ever really lied to her. He just kind of like didn't tell her about, so like, hard. Don't get me wrong, not good what happened, but I think Susan's being unreasonable by, because he has tried to tell her in the past and she would just make out with him and tell him, I
like
care.
These fantasies.
And then now he's tried to tell her and she won't listen to him because she's like, I can't trust you. Well, it's like, he has tried to give you the opportunity so many times and like, you just don't want to hear it. So now like,
You get to sit at your kitchen sink washing dishes and dreaming of him coming over to tell you. But he slips a note under the door. That's what he does, because he knocks and Susan like hides after she's fantasized 5 different ways that they're gonna fuck.
He pulls like a Mr. Darcy, yeah, writing everything out in a letter and giving it to
her. It was kind of hot. I love a good letter.
I do too. He took the time to write her a letter.
I used to have a pen pal. We fucked.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Because nothing's hotter than a written letter.
Like a handwritten card. It doesn't have to be, you know, fucking the Odyssey. It doesn't have to be the best written thing on the planet. But someone taking the time to, like, write how they feel,
yeah,
handwrite it, is very sweet.
More than a love you on Valentine's Day, yeah, like these motherfuckers did.
Yeah.
So he just slides the note under the door, and she, like, grabs it. And he's like, well, now I know you're there. You could have waited. And he's like, I wrote it all out there. Like, you should read it. But Susan has other plans this episode because basically she ends up dating Edie's contractor.
Susan's storyline in this episode, she really fucking annoyed me. Like, I was not vibing with anything she did in this episode.
I mean, this brings us to a larger discussion about, like, the rules. The girl code. The girl code. I don't know what it is, but we can go into a discussion after.
Okay.
So
break it down. Give us the beats in this story.
So Mike tries to make this apology. He's like, everything you ever wanted to know is in that note and the reason for doing what I did. And then, like, she takes it. Next thing we know, Susan's with the girls and she's like, he wrote me this fucking note. And, like, she's literally has that attitude. Like, you guys, like,
she could at least read it.
Like, she didn't even read. Yeah, that's the thing. Lynette and everybody's like, well, did you fucking read it?
And even if he's lying, just read it and see what the fuck this lie is.
They're like, what's in the letter? What's going on? Yeah. And she's like, I can't. I just haven't read it. And everybody says, why? Aren't you dying to know what it says? And she's like, what if it's just far-fetched stories? What if it's lies? And Bree's like, probably. And Lynette starts being like, well, if you're not going to read it, why don't we just rip it up right now? And they take it from her. And Susan's like, no. And she stops everything. There's like a freeze.
She's so dramatic, which I guess comes into... I guess that's the point.
Yeah, and she takes the letter and she, like, puts it on her fridge. But before that happens, while the girls are together, this dude rolls by who's, like, working at Edie's house. Because Edie's a part of the girl gang this episode. Sometimes she is now, I guess. He's like, Edie, I got the blueprints. And he gives her the head nod. He up down Susan, and there's a vibe. And Edie's like, that's my contractor. We're dating. And somebody's like, don't you say that you don't mix business with pleasure. And she's like, I never mix pleasure with commitment. And I'm like, okay. There's a vibe between Susan and contractor. We come back to that. She walks outside her house later to a flat tire. She sees this broken tire. That's how I refer to
this
it.
This broken tire.
Yeah. I call my dad. Dad, my tire broke. She goes to the construction site and finds the dude from the car. His name's Bill, who up-downed her. And she's like, has the nail that she pulled out of her tire with super strength, I guess, and was like, I think this is yours. And I'm like, kind of cute, but like weird.
I thought this was definitely a weird, like, what?
That guy would go home to all of his friends and be like, this fucking weird chick rolled up with a nail trying to pick me up. But I guess he was interested.
I guess, but like, she doesn't seem interested in him or interested in dating or anything. So why would she do that?
I think she's trying. I think she's in that phase where you're like trying to date really hard to like get over somebody. Yeah. Maybe she was just trying to fuck with Edie. Maybe she was bored.
Well, he also just, yeah, that's the other thing. She knows that he and Edie are at this point.
Edie already said we're dating.
Yeah. So this is kind of fucked up. And this will go into our later discussion. Sorry, I keep interrupting, but there were a lot of little moments.
No, you didn't. No, I'm like,
but also yes. This guy is like a less hot version of Mike. Like,
he's not hot.
He's like a template man. Brown hair, white guy, probably 5'11". Like, I'm telling you, just basic as fuck. Like, Mike's got a little spice to him. He's got a little bit of a spice to
Mike's
his look.
Mike's got that shoulder tattoo, the like upper arm tattoo.
Well, Mike has like that smirk.
His charisma, that's he what Mike does. Has.
Yeah, I'm like, oof. I'm like, bring back Mike. I don't want to look at these
Bill. I don't
want
to look at Bill. you ask your friend for Mike, but she comes back with a Bill, and you're like, no. So, yeah, Bill is not as charming, not as charismatic. He plays along with his joke, but I think he kind of makes it clear at a certain point that he just wants to fuck and casually date. She's like, he says that he can fix it and then they can go to lunch. And she's like, you want to get lunch with me? And I'm like, don't act like that's not why you went over there.
I know. I want to smash my head into the wall.
And then Susan is like, no, I have this whole thing with, and she kind of goes into her drama. And I'm like, what? Like the reddest flag ever. Like, she starts telling this dude that she literally just met about her heartbreak with Mike. And he's like, it's literally just a burrito. It's, like, literally just lunch. And she's like, I don't know. And he's like, I'll give you time to think about it and heal. But also, I'll check back with you tomorrow. So, they both suck in this situation, in my opinion. It's like, dude, just get the hint. Like, she's not over it. Susan, why are you even there, like, bothering this guy? So, next thing we know, Edie is running by and Susan's like, hey, Edie, I gotta like ask you something important. Like, how would you like it if I go out with Bill? And Edie stops dead in her track, and she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And Susan's like, he says that you're not dating. Like, he says you only went on a couple dates. And Edie's like, and? Mm-hmm. Like, what about it?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I just wanted to check with you. And she's like, how nice of you. But no. And Susan's like, wait, what? I'm like, this is really backfiring for her. Edie's like, I saw him first. And Susan's like, that's not fair. And Edie's like, well, you shouldn't have asked my permission then. I said no. You asked my permission. I said no. I don't know what's right or wrong here, but I have heard this argument in my real life multiple times with people and friends, and I'm interested. I don't know what the girl code is. I think I need to Google it later, but I think that Edie's in the right here, perhaps. And Edie is, like, bothered as fuck by this. She's like, I try to look past your flaws. Like, I hate everything about you. You're, like, bad hair. But you really know how to push my buttons, like, by doing this, by going out with this man. And Susan's like, okay, I won't go out with him if you have feelings for him. And Edie's like, I don't. And Susan's like, I don't get it then. And she's like, it's like, what is it? If you can't have him, nobody can. And Edie's like, exactly. And I'm like, all right.
So here... let's just jump right into this, I guess. I kind of agree with Edie on this. I don't know. I think Edie does like him a little bit, and I think she's just not saying that because that's like her whole shtick is that she has no strings attached. So I kind of wish Susan could maybe see through that and yeah. be like, oh, like if she doesn't want me to go on a date with him, I probably just shouldn't do it. Because yeah. it's like, okay, I don't care what Edie's reasoning is. At the end of the day, like, the fact that she's telling Susan no probably means that there's a good reason there and, like, it would hurt her feelings.
Yeah.
Like, so Susan should be at least cognizant that that might be part of what's happening. I don't know. I just feel like Susan would do the same thing. Like, how would she feel if, like, she went on, like, if the roles were reversed, Susan would lose her shit.
If it was, like, somebody asking to go out with Mike.
They were literally fighting over Mike in the first few episodes.
Yeah.
And, like, Susan was pissed that Edie was, like, trying to encroach on her. So, like, how is this any different?
I don't think this is any different. I think Edie is in the right. I've never had anybody ask me for permission to date somebody.
I've never wanted to date anybody that I knew that I met through another woman.
Yeah.
That's like, that's fucked up and weird.
Yeah, that's weird that, like, okay... yeah, somebody tells you they went on a couple dates with this guy. And you're like, great time to tell him I have a nail in my tire. Great time to go hit him up for lunch, but not really.
No, Susan was like baiting him.
She was baiting him.
So I feel like even before she knew that Edie like and him weren't seeing each other anymore, she was still acting like that. It's just shady behavior. And I think Susan's just one of those women that like she plays this part of being like female friendly or like a team woman or whatever. But she's also very insecure and needs a man. And like... this is a prime example of that. Like, she would rather throw away a budding friendship with Edie for a guy that she doesn't know.
She doesn't even fucking like him. She knows that she doesn't like him. She's still in love with Mike.
And, so she knows she doesn't like him. And you know what? I don't care, really. She burned Edie's house down in the first episode, and Edie still tried. Yeah, and Edie's still open to being her friend. Edie, in the last episode, when Susan was at her lowest, like, Edie took her out.
Yeah, got her drunk.
And, like... helped her break into Paul's house. Fucked Paul so Susan could get away. Like, Jesus Christ, Susan. Like, Edie's not...
I don't know what girl code is, but I'm pretty sure you just shouldn't date some dude that you met through a friend that says I went on 3 dates with him.
I feel like if you even have to have this discussion, it's probably a no-no.
You shouldn't be asking permission from... you shouldn't ever have to ask permission to date somebody.
And if you have to ask, the answer's probably
if
no.
If you feel like you have to ask, the answer's no. You don't ask your girlfriend if you can date him. Like,
yeah. No, I think that shit was wrong and weird. And it didn't... I just didn't like Susan's attitude about it.
No, because Susan played the victim.
No, she totally played the victim. And like I said, last episode, like, Edie was a good friend to her. So it just seems weird to me that Susan wouldn't want to, like, repay that favor in the slightest.
No, Susan doesn't give a fuck about anybody but herself.
And the whole reason she didn't like Edie to begin with, like, their whole beef started because they were both going after the same guy. So why would she want to repeat that process?
She's the Edie in the situation. I know. She's not winning out. But Bill clearly does like her because then we see him outside just fixing her tire. And I'm
which
like,
is creepy.
I would lose my mind if some guy was just randomly at my car fixing it.
I would not be happy with that.
Whether I knew him or not. Like, get the fuck away from my car. No. I don't need that. Like, and he's like, you have to take it in. Like, this won't hold. And they end up like agreeing to go on a date, but it not after like a little bit of an argument, because he asked her out again and she's like, I can't. And he's like, am I hideous? Which I hate when guys do this. So am I ugly? Like, and she's like, no. And I wrote in parentheses, I'm like, he's whatever. He's not hideous, but he's whatever. And they end up agreeing to go on a date, but they don't like call it a date. He says, I just want to have some fun, dinner, drinks, no strings attached. So that's where I get the vibe that he is like pretty free flowing, not really looking to nail things down.
Also, like, Susan, if I were Susan, it'd be a red flag if like Edie thought they were dating and this guy's just like, we went on a date. I'd be like, that's kind of rude.
Yeah, that's a reflection on him. So he knows this little place, they're out of the way, and he's like, you're gonna love it. So then Susan's on the worst date of her life, where she won't shut the fuck up about Mike. I guess I should say Bill's on the worst date of his life, because Susan won't shut the fuck up about Mike.
It's so cringy, that scene where it just cuts to her going on and on and on. And this poor man, like, read this, the room,
this
girl.
This guy is like, oh my God. And she mentions the letter. And he's like, do you, like, want some nachos? Like, he's trying to, like, order, and she, like, really won't stop.
He's
and,
trying like, to, like, kindly get her to change the subject.
Yeah, and then Edie walks in with purpose, and she tracks them down, and Edie is, like, out for blood. And she's like, your foreman said that you were on a date with a hottie. Obviously, he needs LASIK.
That was a great diss. Edie fucking comes in swinging.
She's like, we agreed. And she said, I just said what you wanted to hear, like, but you guilted me. That's what Sousa says, I think.
And which, again, like, what a bitchy ass. Okay, honestly, this feels like something Edie would say. I'm like, Susan, you're being kind of a bitch. Like, that was a bitchy thing to say.
And she says, I'll hate you forever. She fires the foreman. And, that's that. They end up on their way home. And this guy is kind of a tool on the way home, I realize.
He just gets, well, because Edie fires him.
He just gets worse, yeah.
And I think he just, like, is pissed. Granted, like, Susan should have told him why she, like, that Edie didn't want her to go on the date with him. Yeah. Susan should have been a little more, like, forthcoming about that. And to be fair, I think he's right. I mean, I don't think he's the one that should be telling her this.
He says, I could tell her that you threw yourself at me and I took pity on you and took you out to dinner. Like, he makes up this whole story about her, which, like, maybe is okay because he just had to go through the worst
date of his life.
His desperate
deed to get his job back.
I know, but, like, I don't know if I blame. It's kind of a douchey thing. Like, I would feel like shit if some guy's like, I'm going to lie about why we went out so I could, like, I mean, but I wouldn't be getting him fired, so.
Yeah, but I think he's right when he talks about, like, Susan liking the drama. I mean, he's not very tactful with it, but, like, the way he's just like, no, sis, like, you actively, like, make decisions that will cause drama. Like, you knew that going on a date with me would cause drama.
Yeah, he's like, you get sucked in. And she's like, I do not. And then, like, her tire blows out because she didn't fucking fix it. And he's like, you didn't fix the tire, did you? And I told you to. And then they sit on the curb waiting for somebody.
She's like, I guess I do like the drama.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I might invite it in a little bit. Yeah, Edie wins this round for me. I think Susan was wrong. And I think girl code is just not being a fucking dick to your friends and other chicks. And not, like, yeah, like we said, if you have to ask, like, you have your answer.
I guess it just seems weird that Susan was, like, willing to throw that out for this guy that she doesn't know. And she's not even, there was no chance that anything was going to happen because she's not even close to being over Mike. So it was like, you're really going to fuck things up with Edie to go on a date with this guy who she explicitly told you she didn't want you to go on a date with.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't, I don't, like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And it's a date where she's talked about Mike the whole time. So it's kind of like, Susan, what are you doing?
I've, like, done that on a date, like, when I was fresh off a breakup. But, like,
that part's fine. But to hurt someone or to make someone.
Not with a guy.
If there was
that,
a
like,
Edie involved.
Yeah, that it wasn't dramatic. It was, like, literally, like, a stranger that, like, from an app or something. And, like, obviously didn't go well. But, like, yeah, never a friend's lover.
Yeah.
Where I, like, go. How rude of me if I were to go and be like, can I date him, please? And then I go on the date and I know it's going badly. I just talk about my ex. That would be rude.
The whole thing. I'm just like, Susan, you literally just did everything wrong in this storyline.
Yeah. Susan doesn't.
I just don't think Susan's like Susan's like Susan just comes across to me as the type of woman that will do anything. Like, she'll throw her friends out the door if it means that she gets
the
guy.
She gets the man.
I do worry that that's like the type of person she is. And we've kind of seen it over and over again. She's like Carrie. She's a Carrie. She's a hardcore Carrie. This always takes me back to the, sorry, Sex and the City fans. Hopefully there's some out there.
Yeah, the crossover. Yeah.
But there's that scene where Carrie and Big, like when they're back together, she like ditches on Miranda.
At the bar?
Especially because like Miranda, like cell phones weren't a thing. So you it's not like you could just, she left a voicemail on her home phone.
Yeah.
So it's like you didn't even know for if Miranda got the message.
The one where she meets Steve, that episode.
Yeah. Because she's like, well, he had this veal. And it's like, shut the fuck up, Carrie.
I think we talked about that episode before. I was like, I literally would have hated you.
Yeah, like, that would be like...
But he I'd had this thing. I'd be like, I'm at this bar right now looking like a fucking loser for you.
Yeah, like, and it, not only did she ditched her for a guy who's, like, actively ruined her life at least once.
That meme I sent you the other day, Carrie was pressed to death over this guy that never took her on a vacation.
Like, he tried, kind of.
When...
The first time they broke up, remember they're supposed to go to like the Bahamas or some shit.
Were they?
And then she's like, tell me I'm the one. And he's like, I can't. And then that's like the first time they break up.
Never be asking a man that. Don't be demanding it. Tell me I'm the one.
How sad. But I just remember that's the only, I feel like he was like, all right, I tried to take you out of vacation once. Never doing it again.
Never doing that shit again. Yeah. Susan does have that energy.
She's a Carrie.
She's always saying that shit to Mike, basically.
She's just, like, so manic and, like, love-obsessed, but then, like, acts like she's a good girlfriend when in reality, like, that's not her priority.
No. No, Julie's way cooler. Her daughter ended up cool for some reason.
Lynette's definitely a Miranda. And then Bria's... Dang, these actually fit really well. Bria's Charlotte. And Gabby, yeah, kind of is a Samantha.
Yeah, a little bit. They're different.
Like, it's a little different because they're all housewives.
The archetypes,
but, like, character-wise, like, I feel like if you threw those women, like, the Sex and the City characters into the world of Desperate Housewives, that's where they,
that's the crossover we need. Yeah. Lynette is a Miranda. And, because, yeah, very successful.
Just, like, how she's not very tactful with how she speaks. She's blunt.
Well, Lynette this week breaks up a couple. She breaks up a deaf woman and her husband.
This was that weird period, too, where the actress Marley Matlin, who is known, she's deaf, and she's an Oscar winner for playing, like, a deaf woman. But this was, like, a period where, I remember it, she was guest starring on, like, every fucking show, and every time she had, like, a deaf person storyline. It was, like, they asked her if she wanted to guest star, so they wrote a whole plot around the fact that she's deaf. And this was not just Desperate Housewives. Like, I remember there were a couple of shows where I felt like,
she was on Dance with the Stars.
Like, there were all these weird, like...
Oh, gosh.
She was popping up everywhere for a while, I feel like.
Yeah, she's a great actress. And, like, this storyline was interesting, but also it just makes me hate Lynette. Like, I hated Lynette a couple episodes ago when she ruins Tom's promotion, but I also hated her in this episode.
This storyline, while it's a little disconnected from everybody else, I think it brought up a lot of good questions. I like
about Lynette or
just about what, why don't we break it down and then I can kind of dive in.
Well, Lynette has like the savior complex, like this storyline. She becomes friends with this deaf chick.
Yeah. Who has kids that are friends. Like their kids all go to school together.
Yeah, and like they end up having dinner together, and I was like, cool, and that's making friends. I was like pumped at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's a deaf person, so that's like unique for her.
Yeah.
I can't really see Lynette having friends that are diverse in any way. So I was like, wow, this is a big step for her. And then they have dinner, and like Tom and her, the deaf woman, are hitting it off. And I was like, are they going to leave together? I was like, they're really vibing at this table. But then the husband, while Tom and the wife, while Tom and Alyssa are talking, the husband like turns to Lynette and is literally talking shit about his wife. Lynette doesn't really know what to do about this. She's like, oh, he says everything's always about Alyssa. And
he just makes a lot of derogatory comments.
Yeah. And then Lynette's like, well, sometimes things are all about Lynette too.
Yeah.
Like she tries to deflect. And then this guy is like, we're in counseling. And like, he just kind of unloads this on her. And at the end of the dinner, she goes to Tom and she's like, yeah, Tom, like this guy was talking shit about his wife while she was right there, which is fucked up because she's deaf. She can't hear him.
She's like, it was nasty. And it was nasty. Like, and it's awkward. She's like, I'm a stranger. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I would be so taken aback. And Tom's like, well, we already agreed to play tennis with them. And Lynette's like, I wish we wouldn't have. Like, I'm so uncomfortable. And he's like, we'll just, like, get through it. And I'll talk to him, you know. Tom says that he'll talk to him. And Lynette, of course, can't just fucking chill and, like, listen.
Yeah.
He says that she's not tactical. It's true. Because then they go and play tennis with this couple. And this guy is like, you're deaf, not blind. Like, he's yelling at his wife. Like, just bullshit. Like, being rude as fuck to her. And Tom sees it, too. And Lynette's like, I see what I'm telling you. And Tom's like, I'm waiting for my moment to talk to him. Like, just fucking wait.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynette doesn't wait. She says, you play really well. She says that to the chick.
And the guy's like, come on, she serves underhanded. Yeah. Like, he's just saying, like, every opportunity to
and
say
Lynette
shit.
And Lynette is finally like, what's your problem? And he's like, let me tell you what Alyssa is saying with that phony smile on her face. He like, says the thing, move your ass, Dennis. Like, nice love handles. Like, that Alyssa is really, like, saying mean things to him. And Lynette is like, if you have issues with her, tell her. Like, we're not your counselors. Like, you're not in counseling right now. And it's apparently not working if you're unloading your problems on a perfect stranger. So do something if you're unhappy in your marriage, but don't complain about it to me. And then they, like, trade partners. Then we're at the school and Alyssa comes up to Lynette. Lynette is super jazzed and Alyssa's like, can we talk? Lynette's like, how's it going? And she's like, Dennis fucking left me. My husband left me. And Lynette's like, what? And this mom is going off, but like she's deaf, so she's hard to understand. So she gets her kid to come in and translate. And the kid is translating like this very serious topic. She's like, you talked to him about our marriage with him and it's none of your business and all this stuff. And she's like, he told me the counseling wasn't working. And she's like, where do you get off telling other people to stop going to counseling, though? Like, we had our problems. And, like, Lynette's like, are you should you be saying this in front of your daughter? Mm-hmm. And then the chick's like, are you trying to tell me how to raise my daughter, too? Like, she's just losing it. And then, basically, she calls Lynette a bitch. And then Tom and Lynette are in bed. And Lynette is like, am I a bad person? And I am certainly over here like, yes, yes, you are, Lynette. Like, you should fucking chill. Tom is quiet and she's like, only bad people break up marriages and offend the handicap. And Tom is like, I tried to warn you. And she's like, I don't know why I did it. Like, it was like, it's like compulsive. And he said, you're just trying to look out for your friend. And like, I admire that in you.
But you need to tone it down.
Yeah. He's like, I mean, I let him badmouth his wife to avoid creating a scene. And Lynette's kind of being hard on herself. She's like, that's me. Never afraid to like create a scene. And Tom says, the point is you have a strong sense of what is right and wrong. And you're not afraid to act on it. And that's what I love about you. And then Lynette, it's a sweet moment. She's like, see, that's what I love about you. You took a negative thing and you like found a way to compliment me about it. So that's how it ends. I still don't like Lynette. I don't like her in this storyline. I don't hate her as much as I did in that other storyline where she basically makes Tom lose his promotion. But I hate her like one level below that.
I didn't love her in the storyline either, but I think this like storyline does bring up a good thing that I think everyone's kind of run into at some point in their lives, which is like, what do you do if you witness like a couple and something like this happens? Like, should you say something? Should you not say something? Because at the end of the day, I think Lynette is in her right to say something because this guy is like putting her in an uncomfortable position.
Yeah.
Now, if I were Lynette, I would not have said what she said. I would have said, hey, this is between you guys. I don't want to be a part of it. And yeah. I would have just told him, like, don't talk about it to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that's kind of where I would have left it. And I would have, or I maybe would have pulled Alyssa aside. Maybe, again, I don't know. Maybe said to her, like, hey, like, Dennis has said some stuff that makes me uncomfortable. Like, maybe you guys need to, like, talk about it. But they're already in therapy, so maybe, I don't know. I don't think I would tell him, like, you need to do something about your marriage if you hate it so much. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Dennis, was probably going to leave her anyway, it sounds like. But Lynette definitely expedited the process with the shit she said and how she said it. And I also think she was disrespecting Tom in a way by Tom saying that he was going to talk to the guy about it. and Lynette just not waiting.
Well, Lynette's just got that kind of personality. Like, it's like if she wants it done her way or no way, you know? Yeah. And like Tom,
I'm finding that's a character flaw that I hate about her, though.
She's just very strong.
That like makes me annoyed. The storyline made me annoyed because I'm like, you can't just like fucking chill, Lynette. Like,
yeah, like give Tom a chance.
Yeah.
But also like,
was she right? She has the right to say whatever she wants to him, but
I think like, yeah, Lynette handled it wrong. I think if I were her, I would have said, hey, like, sounds like you guys got some issues. I'm sorry to hear that. But like, it is uncomfortable for me and Tom to hear you say these things. So yeah, maybe like, don't say those things here. She could have said something without being like, leave your wife or blah, you know what I mean? Like, she was just so aggressive about it. And I think that's where Tom was being kind of too soft-willed about it by being like, hey, man.
Hey, yeah. Can we talk about this eventually?
But if I were Tom, like, I would have just been like, hey, dude, like, just not here. Like, yeah, we're having a good day. Like, why are you doing this?
So,
also, this Dennis guy sounds like a fucking psychopath if he's just talking to people that he doesn't know. Weird. Like, good riddance, honestly. Like, Lynette kind of did that girl a favor.
It's like that person you become friends with, and they are, like, kind of chill at first. And then, like, you're 30 minutes into hanging out, and they, like, drop some, like, really heavy shit on you. And you're like, wait, what? Like, I just met you. Like, I'm not even friends with you. So, yes. Interesting. I like that she had some meat. Just hate her as a character sometimes.
I do too, but I do like this storyline because, like I said, I think it brought up something that we've all probably experienced, which is like seeing a friend in a relationship where there's like some sort of something's going on that's wrong. Awkward.
Yeah.
And they put you in a position where you have to like witness it.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely realistic.
Yeah.
Brie has some problems of her own that are just as heavy.
The story's wild.
So we come in on Andrew hotboxing a car with his friends.
Does he have a new car? Did they buy him another car?
I guess they bought him another car.
I swear to God.
They aren't even trying to be...
They're the worst parents ever.
But Andrew's not even being, like, discreet. Him and his friends are just in a smoke-filled car in the middle of the parking lot.
Even the guy was like, why couldn't you have just done this across the street, you idiots?
What the fuck? Yeah. And then Andrew speeds away and, like, basically takes the cop with him. The school cop is like hanging in his car, and Andrew like drives away with him in it. Yeah, I mean, I just think Andrew is like one of my favorite characters though, because he does shit like this.
He's chaotic,
it's
man.
Chaotic, it's chaos.
But I will say, there's a part in this episode where Rex is like, he needs discipline. I'm like, that's your job. Like, what do you mean he needs? Why haven't you been doing it?
Like, Rex is like, can somebody in this bitch discipline my son? He's like, he's looking the around the room. He's like, anybody else but me. But flash forward, Brie and Rex are like, he's expelled 2 months before graduation. And it's like, oh, shit, Andrew just got expelled. They're lucky that no charges were pressed. What are we going to do about him? And then Brie is like, glad you asked. And she fucking like lays out brochures everywhere. Like lays out brochures for boot camp.
She's been ready for this.
She's been prepared. She's fucking ready. So Rex is a little bit reluctant. He said, I like just don't know about this. And Bree's like, if we can't get through to him, somebody else will. And he's like, prison camp. And she's like, it's not like, don't be so dramatic. It looks kind of fun.
She's like, he's not going to be on a chain gang. Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ. Like,
teaches boundaries and respect for boundaries. And then he's like, in an electric fence. And I'm like, Rex, get with the program. Your son is a fucking disaster.
Out of control.
Out of control. He's like, I'm not sending my son away. And she says, it's easy for you when he's not talking back to you, rude as fuck all the time, challenging you every day. And I see Brie fully in this moment.
Like, I do too. Like, Andrew does not respect her the way he respects Rex. And like, Rex, this has been an issue since episode one.
Yeah.
Like, where the kids are so fucking mean to Brie. But you know what?
It's because Rex is rude to her.
I was about
to
say,
the behavior.
Andrew learned that behavior from Rex. And I think that we'll see later in this episode, but I almost feel like that's what they're implying, is that Rex realizes that.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I have some thoughts on this. He says, and Bree says, you're not the one he hates. And so they kind of leave it there. Rex agrees. I'll talk to him, an old fashioned heart to heart. She says, talk to him all you want. I'm going to like look into this. And then Andrew's watching TV and Bree's like, take out the trash. And he's like, sure. And she's like, and he just continues watching TV, which I've done this to my mother when I was young. And she's like, now, not 5 hours from now. And he gets up and he's like, I'm meeting Justin at the mall tonight, so I'm going to need like $40. And she's like, no.
The audacity. This bitch just got expelled. Is this a joke?
And he's like, what? And she said, no allowance. Like, no allowance now, boy. And he says, fine, I'm not taking out the trash then. And what are you gonna do, torture me? And she pops off and is like, all I've ever wanted for you is to be happy, and you're not, and I have no idea what it is, like, how to help you.
Rex is standing outside. He can see what's happening. Yeah. Like, he's just kind of watching.
Bree is standing in the way because Justin, whatever his name is, Andrew gets up, and he's like, you can get out of the way. And then he kicks her.
He kicks her out of the way.
And it's horrid. And I was like, it was so... I couldn't even believe it. Yeah. I was like, what?
No, and Rex comes in, like, guns blazing, grabs Andrew, throws him up against the wall.
Bodies him.
Yeah, and he's like, I never want to see you do this shit again. Like, don't even, I'll throw you through this fucking wall if you do this again.
Yeah, the next time you touch your mother, I will throw you through this wall. You understand. Andrew is looking sorry as fuck. I've never been
he doesn't even look sorry. He looks resentful.
Yeah.
Like, now he's just more pissed at Bree.
Yeah, and I've never been more attracted to Rex.
I have something to say at the end of the episode regards to this.
I was like, oof, I'm like looking like a superhero. Oh my god, Rex was looking hot, like bodying, and oh my god,
I can't have no words because I'm just like, yup.
Like, and it's like, typically, like, that shit doesn't turn me on. Like, that's not my thing. That's not my kink. Like,
it turned me on because it was so hot watching him stand up for his wife like that. Her.
Oh my god, that's what it was. It was the emotional aspect.
Yes, it was. We're so tied into this couple. I know. I feel like I'm Brie. Like, I'm Brie in that moment. I was like,
my fantasy is that my husband defends me against my own son, my unruly son.
But it is a stark, I think it was also kind of hot in a weird way, because like, we've seen Rex grow so much in regard to how he treats Bree, and I think that moment, I they don't say it in the episode, but I do think Rex recognizes that part of why Andrew is such a fuck up is because of his lack of parenting.
Yeah, I think it slowly dawns on him.
Yeah, I think Rex realizes, like, oh, I helped create this monster by disrespecting Bree openly and causing an environment where everyone thought it was okay to act that way.
I mean, your kids, like, pick up on what you do.
Especially teenagers.
Like, as an adult, I realize I do everything my parents did. And so, yeah, teenagers, even worse. Teenagers are fucked up. And it doesn't end there, because the next thing we see, Bree and Rex are waking Andrew up in the middle of the night. And he's like, what happened? Did Grandma die? And I'm like, what the fuck? That's your first thought when your parents are waking you up in the middle of the night? And they're like, listen, it's clear that you're unhappy, you're smoking pot, the violence, we feel like you need to spend some time thinking about your goals and whatnot. They're giving him like a nice little speech that he is going to pop off about in a second. Andrew's like, what the hell? And they're like, there's a camp and it's called Camp Hennessy. And I'm like, that sounds kind of lit.
I know. I'm like, why would they call it that?
For boys like you who have lost their way. And he's like, you can't, what? Like, you're not going to camp for juvenile delinquents. And he turns around to go back to sleep. And these guys come in to get him.
And it's insane.
He tries to run and it's so pathetic. Bree and Rex are just watching. And he's like, Mom. And she Bree looks at him in the eye, and he fucking spits on her.
Nasty.
Disgusting. And no matter what you say or do, I will always love you, she says. And he recoils. And I'm like, oh my god.
Rex tries to fucking body him too. When he spits on her, Rex looks like he's about to, if he had a gun, he would have shot him.
I feel like he would have. But can you imagine somebody spitting on somebody you love in general?
I would lunge. If someone spit on my boyfriend, I would lunge. Yes. I would get furious. I would lose it.
If I saw any, I wouldn't even know what to do. I mean, I would probably have a gut reaction. Like,
I'm telling you, it's like the most disrespectful thing you can do. So like, if someone spit on you, I'd fucking lunge. I think like my initial reaction would be like
clocking
fury. Yeah. Like, I would be furious.
Yeah. Oh my god. If somebody spit on my mother too, this is crazy. But Rex regrets sending him in the morning after this whole scene. I think they're shaken up, and you can see it in the acting and in the scene and the vibe. And Bree comes from behind or he comes behind Bree and hugs her, I think.
No, I think she hugs him because she's like, because she brings up like how grateful she is to have like a real partner again.
Yeah. He's, thank you for standing behind me through this. You don't know what it means to me. It's been a long time. Yeah. Since I felt like I had a real a partner. And Rex looks a little bit incredulous at first, but then they hold hands. And I'm like, okay, there's another nice ending to the story.
Yeah.
Of Andrew just being a total dickwad to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That storyline cuts deep. I'm like, ugh, like, it makes me feel icky that he hates his mom so much.
Oh, man.
For no reason. Like, yeah.
You're in for a real treat. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
This is not the worst thing Andrew ever does. How about that?
Are you being for real?
I'm being for real.
Towards Bree?
Yeah. That's all I'll say. So you can imagine scenarios. But this is not the worst thing.
After we just said spitting on somebody is the most disrespectful thing that he can do.
No, he does some really horrendous ass shit.
Oh my God. I like love hate Andrew.
I love Andrew though. I'll give you that. How about that?
I love hate
Andrew. I'm going to really confuse you right now.
I know.
I love Andrew. But like I love Andrew as a character. Love him. And you know, he does have his moments. But there is a period where he gets even worse. And it's like shocking.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Be excited. I'm in on Andrew.
That's the most spoiler I'll give you, I guess, of this show.
Andrew is the most interesting thing to happen to Rex and Bree.
Andrew's just a really interesting character, and they do a really good job with his, like, development and, like, kind of, like, devolving he does. He goes back and forth. But it makes sense every time he does it, if that makes sense.
I'm like, where is he now? Where is this actor now?
It's Sean Pyfrom. I would love for him to be on our show.
Oh, my God. We should shoot.
He's, like, the number one guest I want because I love his character so much.
I love his character. We're only 17 episodes in.
He's given us, like, some of the juiciest storylines.
Oh, he's gay. He's the one gay character. He hit
Mama Solis.
Oh, my God. He fucking did a hit and run. He had an alcohol problem for sure.
We got a great strip club scene because of him.
The strip club scene is my favorite. I forgot about that till now. The strip club scene. Yeah, he's been the best character so far. I can't wait to see what happens next time. How do you guys feel about Andrew? Let us know.
Without spoilers, though. Remember, Julia doesn't know exactly what will happen.
I really have no idea. I'm like...
She does know that he gets worse and better, but she doesn't... Yeah. She can't even... For those of you that know, you know that she'll never be able to figure out what the heck's gonna happen.
So shit. So for Gabby, we'll roll along. We'll talk. We'll discuss in our little 5 apple rating or whatever more.
Yeah.
I'm not over Andrew yet, but we got to keep it going. I know, just for time's sake. But I'm like, I could talk about Andrew all day. Basically for Gabby.
They actually had a lot happen in this episode.
Like we saw at the beginning, Mama Solis is dead.
But they don't know that at first.
They don't know that's at first, but you can imagine like, to summarize, Mama Solis is dead. And how can you guys imagine Carlos is taking this?
Yeah.
Either way, they're like, we come in on them and they're like talking with the lawyers about the plea bargain. And like, Carlos is really stoked because that means they have a weak case if they're offering him a plea bargain. They don't have to sell the house. Yay. But hold on. We're not taking the plea. We have to pay the lawyers. So like, you know, we're just not going to do that. Like if their case is weak, I'm not going to take the plea. And Gabby is like, no, like you need to take the plea. And Carlos is like, that means going to prison for 8 months. And she's like, yeah, but we like agreed that you were gonna fucking like do it.
Yeah.
And also like, you're not understanding money. they're like arguing about this. They're starting an argument about this. And then the phone rings and it's the hospital. And Carlos is like, is it Mama? And Gabby is like, looks at him with the saddest eyes ever and hugs him. And she's like, I'm so sorry. And I said that I love that she got away with her affair with John weirdly. Because she hugs Carlos and then she smiles.
She has like a fucking Grinch smile.
And I didn't feel any type of way. I was like, she got away with it. Kind of excited for her right now. So then Mary Alice Young, we have a voiceover when we come back to them. Some people believe you're judged by the way you live your life and others believe that you're judged by the way that you leave it. And they're like choosing a casket and Carlos is bawling the fuck out on this funeral. Mm-hmm. He's like choosing this crazy one that costs like so much money. And Gabby's like, that's a lot. Your mother was sensible. Wouldn't she want like this wood veneer one, which is just offensive. And he's like, you never liked her. And Carlos is like grieving and like, I mean, Gabby never did like her, but, you know, when you're grieving, just things are, like, so hectic. And they argue about this, about, like, he's like, my mom loved you. And she's like, she treated me like trash. And I said, that's how Hispanic families show love. Carlos is just, he calls her a queen. He calls Juanita a queen.
He's like, mama was a queen.
And he's just saying, we're gonna spend this money. And Gabby's like, we don't have money. You're still not understanding money. Like,
she's like, we don't have it. She's like, I'm not just saying no because for the sake of it, like, we don't have it.
Yeah, she's like, we are so poor.
She's like, we might have to sell our house.
Yeah. So Carlos is getting ready to bury his mother. Gabby was making sure that her secret was taken to the grave. So that's what Mary Alice says as Gabby rolls up to the hospital and she's there. The nurse is like, I assume you're here to pick up Juanita's things. And Gabby's like, no, actually.
Yeah, she's like, no.
She's like, I need to talk to, like, the nurse who was on duty. Like, how did she die? Like, what was up with it? Mm-hmm. And was it quietly? She doesn't really find anything out in that particular session.
She just finds out that Juanita died alone, which is what she wants to hear.
Yeah, and then she doesn't even, like, take the shit with her when she leaves.
Yeah, she's like, you didn't throw that away.
But there's some sketchy dude in the corner, like, watching the whole time, watching this conversation between Gabby and the nurse.
Well, because they're nervous that she's going to, ask too many. They're nervous about her asking questions, but she's not asking for that reason. And they don't realize that, though.
But then they give her the money at the end anyway.
Because they don't know that that's why she was there.
So then we catch up at the funeral. Everybody's in their little pairs, like, talking shit to a degree. Like, Julie and Susan are. And, like, Lynette and Bree are talking a little bit of shit. And they're not talking. Well, they're not talking shit about the procession. They're talking about their own dramas. Yeah. Which I kind of love. They're at this funeral. And they're like, oh, my God, Edie's such a bitch. We zone in on, like, Gabby. Like, Gabby's kind of losing it because there's, like, a fucking crypt. They roll up. This procession is leading.
A procession. A singer.
Yeah. It's, like, all the money and all the shit, and Gabby's losing it, and Gabby walks out on the funeral, and everybody, like, starts following her. She, like, tries to walk away because she loses it on Carlos. She tells Carlos to go to hell, and, like, they start arguing, and everybody's following, and Bree's, like, this way, and she starts directing, which I thought was really cute. They start arguing about the house and the money. The only reason I agreed to give up the house is because I thought that we could get a gorgeous little apartment, but, like, if you don't take the plea deal, like, we can't even fucking do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, not understanding, why should, like, I have to suffer because you did the crime and, like, I agree that it's fucked up. Basically, she's like, Carlos, just, like, go.
She's like, you respect your mom enough to do this, but you can't even respect me enough to, like, make sure I have a roof over my fucking head.
Yeah, she's like, Carlos, just go to jail. And, like, that's the argument.
Really quick, Gabby's hair in this episode was, like, that weird flipped thing. It was awful. It's so jarring. I'm sorry. Every time she came on the screen, I was like, oh, my God. Brutal.
There were some style. They were taking some stylistic chances.
Terrible. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So next time we see Carlos, he's writing at the table, and Gabby's like, "What's up?" He's making an emergency list so that Gabby will know who to call when things break. And she's like, "Why?" And he's like, "I'm taking the plea bargain so you can keep the house." And I'm like, wet over it.
Honestly, that was a good, like. And I don't even think he's that out of turn with what he says next.
So he says, when I buried my mother, I did it with respect and I don't regret a single penny, but I'm the one who put us here and I stopped respecting you. Gabby is like, you're brave. And Carlos is like, it's not without strings. I need you to promise that you will be here when I get out. And Gabby's like, duh, husband. And he's like, I also need you to promise that you'll be faithful while I'm gone. And Gabby's like, yeah, I can do that. Definitely. Like, her voice squeaks. It goes, like, an octave higher.
And he's like, I'm not an idiot. Like, you're a beautiful woman with needs. And I'm just like, he's not wrong. They're married. He shouldn't even have to ask her these questions. Like, low-key, like, I don't know. I think Gabby's kind of annoying in this part because it's, like, it's not that unreasonable.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm a very jealous, possessive man. I need to hear you say it. And she goes, I promise. Squeaky tiny voice. Yeah. I promise you. Tomorrow I'm seeing the lawyers. I love you. They get intimate. It's kind of cute. And he says, just so you know, I will hold you to that promise. And then Gabby goes to the hospital to meet with that sketchy dude who is watching. And then nurse is there too, and she's like sobbing. The nurse who saw Juanita die.
Because they neglect. She shouldn't have died. It was a neglect because no one was around that she died. But basically the guy says, like, you'll get a settlement. So Gabby calls the lawyer and is like, how does this all work? And they're like, she's like, hypothetically, And they're like, well, once Carlos is in jail, the case is closed and the government can't take your money. So you should. So she's like, okay, so she doesn't want to tell Carlos, which comes across shady, but she's right. Because, like, if she tells Carlos, he's going to try and make it as a way that he doesn't have to go to jail, but the government will take it. So she's like,
she's doing them both a big favor.
She is.
And Carlos.
And I feel like if she was going to leave Carlos, she would have already left Carlos. Like, I don't know why he's acting like. If I were her, I would have left him the moment he got arrested. I would have filed for divorce.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. I was like, I think I would wait long enough to get money, like, not to be totally broke. I would get him out of jail, unfreeze the account, and divorce him.
But the government's just going to, at that point, I'd just be like, I'm going to wash my hands of this.
I would have to be strategic, but it ends with her calling the lawyer and being like, what if I got, like, if I won $1.6 million on a scratcher? Like, would the government be able to take it? And then that's when she's like, before or after Carlos goes to jail? And they're like, after he goes to jail, you'd be able to keep it. So, I mean, Gabby, as she has said time and again, just pulled herself up, like, from nothing. She grew from nothing. She's smart. She's smarter than all the other housewives, I would have to say. I mean, she conducted an illicit affair with a 16-year-old for a long time with no one knowing until mm-hmm. she decided she wanted to get caught. That's my new storyline for Gabby. That's how it went down. We were always like, she's doing it so publicly. But I think at that point she wanted to be caught.
Yeah.
So I think good on Gabby. I don't have a problem with her.
I don't think she's doing anything wrong in that sense. I don't think she would also like hide the money from him once he got out.
She never
implied that she was trying to just get the money and go.
But she knows that he's irrational. If you're dealing with an irrational person, like.
Yeah, speaking of irrational, like, I recently was involved in the planning of a funeral, and that shit is expensive, and we went, like, with the cheaper options for everything. Mama Solis's funeral must have at least been, like, $60,000.
Easy. If not $100,000.
The coffin alone.
Yeah.
Like, the cheapest coffins are about $1,000. And he picked, like, one of the fancier ones. That was probably, like, a $30,000 coffin. When we were picking a coffin at this funeral, they had coffins that were, like, $45,000. And I was like,
I'm, like, just cremate me. It's on the podcast. Cremate me, you guys.
No, like, this is me verbally agreeing. First of all, I'm going to have a will locked up that's already paid for that cremation because I'm not. That's crazy.
Make me a tree. One of those ones where you go and plant me.
Make me a tree. That's cute.
I want to make me a tree.
I don't need some fat headstone. I don't need a fucking, what is it called again? What she's buried in?
Oh,
a crypt?
I called it a crypt.
How much is that?
It's like an above ground, you know, thing. A mausoleum is, I think, what it's officially called. But it's, I mean, they have to build it. So I'd say 100. They have to build it from scratch, and you know how much they charge you. They charge you for a coffin. Like, that business is crazy.
That's sick. But yeah, Carlos spent a ridiculous, like, the amount of money people make in a year. Yeah, more than my salary.
More than I make.
More
in a
than
year.
What we make combined. Sick.
So, at the end of the episode, Mary Alice Young wraps it up. She says, "We all honor heroes for different reasons. Sometimes for their daring, sometimes for their bravery, sometimes for their goodness. But mostly we honor heroes because at one point we all dreamt of being rescued." And we see Susan returning the note to Mike without ever reading it. And then if the right hero doesn't come along, we just have to rescue ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's weird she didn't read the note, but whatever.
Yeah, it was
dramatic.
I'm like, okay, this is how I'm rating this episode. Who had the worst storyline? They were all pretty bad. Besides, like, I'd say Gabby and Bree. I'd say Susan and Lynette for me had terrible. Like,
I didn't want
anything to do with it. If I had to like kick two people out of my friend group, it'd be them. I'd be like, you two fucking blow. Like, Edie, you can stay. Like,
for real.
But yeah, I guess we can maybe do our Apple rating first.
Apple rating first?
Do you think? Or what do you want to do? Housewife first? Or Fuck, Marry, Kill first?
Should we change up the order? Do you want to just do the Apple rating this time before we do the other two?
No. Okay. Maybe we should talk the other ones over because maybe it'll give me more clarity. Okay.
For Fuck, Marry, Kill, I do have those ready.
Okay. Let's go.
So my fuck is Rex.
Something I never thought I'd hear you
I know,
say.
I literally put dot, dot, dot for once.
I know.
Yes, I really actually do like that Rex is trying to be a good husband. I think he realized in this episode, maybe I'm reading in too much and the writers did not think of this at all, but like, I feel like Rex is seeing like the consequences of his actions, which is when he was acting a fool, he fucking screwed up the whole dynamic of his family by treating Bree like shit openly in front of their kids. And then having this affair, I'm sure part of Andrew and Danielle are, they're going to have problems because their dad is publicly a man that was paying for sex. Like, everyone found out about that.
Yeah.
Like, his actions have caused problems for their children. I firmly believe that Andrew has a lot of attitude issues because of how he was mimicking what Rex does.
Yeah. The way that he treats his mom and probably his significant others.
Yeah.
I was going to say women, but he's dating men. But that, I think that still...
It still applies.
It still applies. Yeah. Like, in his relationships, his interpersonal relationships, I'm sure that he's going to be a nightmare to date.
Yeah. No, he's going to be horrible. So I think, like, Rex is, like, finally seeing that and trying to atone for his actions by being supportive. And I think at the end of the day, like, he's always loved Bree. We've always, like, we've seen that. But, like, he now is realizing, like, I gave her... Like, I almost feel like he could probably see himself in Andrew, like, because the way he treated Bree and watching the pain that Andrew's treatment is giving Bree, like, that's what Rex was doing for the first 10
episodes. I think he's realizing after, like, after his public shame, it took public shame for him
to fully grasp
it. To fully grasp how shitty he was.
Yeah. But this episode, he stepped up and, like, it was hot, so I'm going to give him the fuck. I'm going to kill Andrew because he's fucking spit on his mom.
Okay.
That shit was not okay. But for Mary, I put Tom, LOL.
Oh,
I just like Tom. Like,
he's thinking that, yeah.
Voice of reason. Like, he just seems like the kind of partner you want to have. I don't think he's a pushover. I think that Lynette can be intense, and he's kind of like, you know what? If you're going to make your bed, you could lie in it, whatever. You know, but he still loves her and supports her when he can.
I like that he turns a negative into a compliment.
And I like that he kind of lets her make mistakes. Like, he even kind of said, like, I had a feeling this would happen, but, like, you're going to be you, and I love you. And I thought that was very, like, we might not love those things about Lynette, but I do love that Tom does.
I mean, sometimes I'm waiting for a redeeming storyline for her. I liked her when she was addicted to drugs.
Me too.
I did. That's when I liked her the most. Yeah. I was like, stay addicted. Okay. I also fuck Rex. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody.
Yeah, we kind of lost it earlier. Yeah. They could, like, hear how wet we were.
I was like, he bodied Andrew. It's crazy. I also will marry Rex. I'm going to fuck and marry Rex. Because I'm marrying this version of Rex, I should say, where he has, like, realized that he was super shitty and, like, is now atoning for his actions. Like, pulling it together and, like, being a real partner, as Bree says. Mm-hmm. I marry this Rex where he's, like, holding her hand in the time of need. Like, I'm into it. I kill Bill, actually, because, like I said, I do like Andrew a lot. I've killed him many times.
I like Andrew, too, but the spitting?
The spitting was a lot, but got off him this week. I gotta kill Bill because I found him very annoying, and I think he just is such a fuck. Like, I got fuckboy vibes from him.
I think he's definitely a fuckboy.
I was a bit triggered, and I'm like, he can go.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, doubling down on Rex. And I also would like to nominate Rex for house husband, for hubby of the week. Because,
I would give Rex house, like, or house person
house
of the week.
Housewife of the week, yeah. Hubby of the week, because he stood up for his wife.
In a very real way.
And I have mad respect for it. So, I mean, I can't think of anybody else. I'm trying to think, like, maybe Gabby, because she is a good money manager.
But I put, like, maybe Edie. I didn't have an answer, but I put maybe Edie because I liked when she fucking showed up at the restaurant and was like, you're fired and you and I are enemies now. I was like, that's a bad bitch behavior.
That's
right there.
Bad bitch behavior.
That's Edie. You call her a lot of things, but she's consistent. And I think that's why Susan's actions were so stupid, because it's like, you know, Edie's going to get fucking pissed. Like, what's wrong with you?
Call her a lot of things, but she's consistent. I like that. That's Edie. So we can go with Edie.
I would say Edie or Rex.
Yeah.
Or both.
We can go with both.
She can be, like, housewife and he can be hubby.
Yeah, hubby of the week. So maybe we have a new category
now.
Yeah,
maybe.
But Rex really takes the cake. Edie, consistent. So, dang. Okay. Well, Apple rating. I think I might have a clearer vision now.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, 4.5.
Oh, dang. You went high.
I went high. Shit, I didn't think I was going high.
Oh, my God. 4 for me, because I hated Lynette so much, and I hated the storyline. Like, so, Susan sucked. I hated both of those. They just... I didn't realize how much I hated it until we even talked it over.
Why did I give it a 4.5 then? I gave it a 4.5, I think, because while I didn't like their behavior, I think their storylines, like, gave us a lot to talk about. I feel like this episode gave us a lot to talk about, and episodes like that, I tend to rate higher.
Yeah.
Because I think the storylines were interesting. I didn't like their actions, but I liked what happened. Because I liked that Susan's story kind of brought up, like, where does the girl code lie? I like that Lynette's storyline brought up this, like, thing. These are just things that we can relate to. Like, we can relate to the girl code. We can relate to, oh, what do you do when you're witnessing, like, something bad happening in a relationship? Or, like, you're put in an uncomfortable spot. So I think, like, while they pissed me off a lot in this episode, I did find them interesting, at least.
Yeah.
And then I really liked Bree. I like everything that happened with Bree and Rex. I thought that was a great storyline. It was, like, a lot of character development.
That one was the best, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then, I liked Gabby and Carlo. I liked Carlos, too. I like that.
I feel like there's a lot of growth there, yeah, as well.
Okay. You're warranted. I didn't give it a 3, though.
No.
We're still in the 4s.
And
so
I get why you gave it a 4.
Yeah, like, I was just like...
I get that. Like, I
was frustrated at those two.
Yeah.
And, like, I liked Bree and Rex for sure, but I hate what Andrew did. And, like,
shit's brutal.
I feel like I did want a little bit more of a conclusion with Mama Solis. Like,
yeah.
Could have done another episode of her actually being around.
That's fair.
But I get it. We had to kill her off.
It was time. They needed to kind of, like, end that, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, we've made it, you guys.
We've
that
made it.
That was a heavy, that was like one of our longer ones.
I know.
While.
We had a lot of stuff.
Well, these stories were so in depth. So
I know. Like, there's a lot going on, I feel like.
We hope you're still buckled in. But other than that, you guys, we loved, we're so happy that we could do a desperate deed that somebody gave us today.
Yeah, that was super fun.
So if you want to keep sending those or tell us how you feel about Andrew, you can message us through Instagram. That seems to be very popular.
That seems to be the main form of communication that we've had so far. And I'm totally cool with
I'm
that.
I'm cool with that. We have an email as well. We also have our Twitter that we tweet once a week about the episode that we're watching that week. We have our website. You can check us out there. But also listen to us every Monday.
Yeah.
That's when we drop. So Mondays on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever. Follow us on Spotify. Subscribe
on Apple.
Do whatever. But it's been great. We are so happy to connect with all you guys.
We are.
Across the world. We're in like 8 countries now. It's really crazy.
I know. We're international superstars over here.
Yeah, is that for real? But we're happy to connect with people wherever you are. With all that being said, next week we're going to be watching season 1, episode 18. We're excited to see Andrew in boot camp, hopefully.
Yeah.
And wherever else these storylines are going. So tune in next Monday. But before that, take some time and know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.